Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. We are going to try to do a lot with this episode. I know we were going to actually get into some more details regarding the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions and that content. We're going to have to push that off because as it stands, going into this week, we need to talk more about the petitions. I want to do, and before I do that, I actually want to do a wrap up on the Christmas that I didn't get to cover. But I hope you had a great Christmas, and I hope that you actually focused or shifted your focus towards Christ and not towards, you know, I'll just say the corporate world and so forth. Anyway, we'll get into wrapping that up, as well as we're going to talk about the news cycle, because as we look at the news cycle, we have to start recognizing that the way things are happening and what is happening and the way it's presented has nothing to do with the truth and what's going on. So we will get into that first, but let me just kind of cover the obligatories first. The show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. And this is the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. Now, I've been talking about our comment line, and I actually have I need to go through and change some of my bumper music. Bumper music is the intro or the outro at the end of a segment. And so when we come back from a break, I've been telling people to call the call-in line. We've set up this phone number for you, 425-270-5416. And what we want you to do is if you've got a question, if you've got a comment, then we will address that. And actually, we will play your question, we'll play your comment, and I will address that almost and we'll make it seem like it's a live thing. However, if you have the type of question, if you have something that really requires, depth, where, the answer is going to logically lead to the next question and so forth, where it's something that we should actually have a conversation about, then I'll call you back and we will actually just record that conversation so we can play it for others. Why? Because I believe that you get something out of that conversation. I'm not sure how many people have gone through formal education. When I say formal higher education, that's what I meant. And so when we talk about formal higher education, there are different degrees of that and there are different qualities of that. If you are in an in-class brick-and-mortar higher education curriculum, then you will realize that you get far more out of the class than what the teacher presents. The reason being is because you actually hear the conversations, you're witness to engagements with the professor, you're witnessing engagements between students and so forth that you do not get online. When you hear conversations of people bringing up questions, you didn't even think about that. And the answer, wow, that's interesting. I never would have realized that. Or it may have pointed you towards something that becomes a complete discovery on your own. Same thing with the conversations and engagements with the professor. Sometimes you actually hear where people, challenge the professor on what he's presenting as accurate. I used to do it all the time. I mean, I believe that when I was in, when the professor came into the class after he knew who I was, or she, after they knew who I was, they would have to make, it's not that I sought special, recognition or anything like that. And I'll give you a good case in point, labor law. When I was going through my management, business management curriculum, and or actually for my degree. And so I had a labor law professor, and because I was so well versed on the Constitution, after the first or second class, she just referred to me as the, you know, the constitutional expert in the class, because she didn't know the Constitution. And here she is as a lawyer. I mean, she actually practices law on the side for labor law. And so I think that she probably learned a bit from the papers that I presented, because I put them in context of the Constitution. Anyway, so when you do that, when you have those types of dialogues in person, you get that. But when you're online, you don't even see those things. You don't see those engagements. It's just, you know, one-on-one between you and the professor. Do you think that's a good way of learning? No. This is why at higher education level, it is always better to be in a large class. Sometimes the class can be too large, but you want to have, and I will tell you that having having the doubting Thomas, having that person that challenges or questions the professor, or you know whoever is presenting material, because it could be a guest that they're bringing in, but whoever gets up and challenges and actually articulates a very good argument, boy, that really becomes an educational process. Why? Because that is when education takes this perception, or actually moves in the direction of free academia, where things can be challenged. This is why in the lower education, it is not free. It is not a, you know, it's not a learning. It is a programming curriculum. And so anyway, I digress. But what I wanted to do was I wanted to make sure that when people do ask me questions, you know, and as I start getting engaged with people in social media, I am going to ask that person, you know, that is sending me either a message or what have you, hey, I don't want to answer these questions. Give me a call and I'll answer it that way. And so, you know, because I do hear from Mr. Jones, and I don't want to refer to anybody's name unless they are, you know, copacetic. They're okay with, you know, me dropping their name out there. And that's just because, you know, I respect privacy, obviously, because I want a level of privacy for myself as well. Anyway, so that comment line, let me get back to that. That comment line is 425-270-5416. If you got a question, a comment, or anything, even if you have a complaint, even if you catch me on something that I may have misspoken, I will play that. Challenge me on that. And as a matter of fact, you can come, you find me on Facebook and say, hey, I challenged you on my Mobistrip press page, and I'll come clean. Anyway, because I believe that we need to hold each other accountable. We need to be able, that's a part of liberty, right? I've said this several times, that there's the three elements or the three factors of liberty is free agency, responsibility, and accountability. So we have to, when we're being held accountable, we have to act responsible. And that's basically what we're trying to do with these petitions and so forth. But before we go too much further, what I want to do is I really need to wrap up this Christmas thing. But I don't have enough time in this segment. So let me do another thing that I probably haven't said in a little while. Thank you for tuning in. I do know that as we grow, and as a matter of fact, last week we were pegging really high. We were in the top 10 for most of the show, for a few of the shows last week. And when I say top 10, out of all the different streaming shows, if you go to TalkStream Live, they actually have, and they will show what shows are ranking kind of high out of all the different streaming shows available. And so if you go there, you'll actually see that when this show is being aired, it is actually, you know, typically we're in between 10 or the top 10 and the top 20 in that range. And if you look at the hundreds of shows that are on at this the time of this show, that's actually really good. And if you look at some of the shows we're beating, that's really, really good. But It's not about the, and I want you to understand, I get $0 from where we are rating. What I get is pleasure and this satisfaction to know that the message is getting delivered to more and more people. As we start getting educated and start focusing on what we need to do, then it makes it easier to, you know, to stop listening to the news cycle and so forth. This goes down and plays hand in hand with operant conditioning and classical conditioning. Most people are classically conditioned, and this is why they can't break that news cycle addiction, or that, you know, how, you know, when something happens in the news, they just get, you know, immersed into that. Which, another thing we want to cover after we go through the Christmas stuff, or the final things that I didn't get a chance to cover. And next year, I promise I'll get it all into one show so that I don't have to span it over two. The whole point is that as we go through the news cycle, there's things like this, what happened in Tennessee, that, you know, people go, wow, I mean, we need to talk about this. Actually, I want you to start understanding the perspective of things so that you can just quickly, the sooner you can dismiss something, the sooner you can actually start using your opportunity cost. Because you spend an opportunity cost, you waste your time and opportunity when you get sucked into those news cycles. And so this is why, if you see things on the news, because the news should have zero credibility. And I will get into that after we come back from the break and talk about the Christmas that I need to cover.
To watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic. I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Okay, and I really hate bleeding into the promo, so sorry about that. Anyway, where we really left off and what I wanted to cover was right about where I go into Ulysses S. Grant declaring Christmas as a legal federal holiday and the bill that actually introduced that he signed. Because you got to understand, even back then, they recognized that only the federal government would be having this holiday. And why did they announce this and why did they go through this? If you read the wording of the bill, and I don't really want to read the whole wording, they point out that anybody that is going to be making claims for debts or what have you, for that particular holiday, that, you know, they will not be giving, you know, tender if you want to exchange, you know, notes for gold or what have you, because that's what they were doing back then. Any interfacing with the federal government on the 25th of December, they were unavailable. They, you know, they were not there. Everybody got that day off. Now, it was not a national holiday where it basically everybody recognized that. It was just a federal holiday. And the federal government cannot, there's no power in the Constitution for them to mandate a national holiday. But they do now. Isn't that interesting? Like Labor Day and so forth. They now mandate and they place the burden upon small businesses and what have you. You must pay for. And actually, if I remember correctly, most small businesses aren't forced to be closed. And it's usually the unions that demand that you give an account for holidays and so forth. But like if you're a retailer, you can't afford to be closed. Most stores, most grocery stores are open on the 4th, on Labor Day and so forth. A lot of stores do close because of the Christian or religious insinuations regarding Christmas and Thanksgiving. But even on Thanksgiving, some people are still open for your dollars. But if you go through the bill, you'll actually see how, you know, they were basically putting it out there for everybody to know that the federal government is unavailable on the 25th of December. And that happened in 1870. By the last quarter of the 19th century, America eagerly decorated trees, started learning carols, baked and shopped for the Christmas season. So in other words, all of a sudden, people started engaging in commerce. And you have to understand, most people on a month-to-month basis, you had their normal expenditures. But now, in the middle of winter, when people are their least productive, what's a farmer doing to making money? They're shut down. Maybe the dairy farmer, or maybe, you know, the livestock and that. But if you're an agrarian, actually plant plants and grow stuff, most everybody's out of business at that point in time. They're on their sabbatical or their off period, kind of like school. Anyway, but all of a sudden, there was this real pop in retail and people buying, you know, food. And if you understand, I think most people have at least a good perception of history, sugar was not, and butter and those types of things were not necessarily a everyday staple. Like whiskey or beer and some of those types of things were, because provisions were hard. Fermented drinks, wine and those types of things, because they didn't have refrigeration, was a necessity. And so they distilled them and they started, you know, making them stronger and stronger, because as you got your nutrients, getting that buzz was even better. Anyway, I'm not going to dive into that, in getting drunk and all of that. But what I do want to say is that the perceptions back in those days were a lot different. Alcohol was not a recreational thing. It was a necessity thing, because juices wouldn't keep through the winter, and they knew they needed to have the nutrients of the, you know, the different types of juices. And this is why they had different types of wines, brews, beers, or what have you, so that they could get those nutrients. And so all of a sudden now there was this, you know, huge embracing of what we'll call the, you know, this Christmas holiday. And there was this uptick. The traditions that we enjoy at Christmas today were really invented to help open up people's spending. Some things came to be by blending together customs from different countries into, and these were pagan customs, into different countries what was considered to be to many of our national holidays. Ergo, the roots of the pagan acts give credence to help obfuscate the truth that Christmas was not a holiday in Christ's time or by Christ himself. I mean, Passover. I mean, that's this very specific holiday. That's right there in Easter time, right? That's months away. But if you understand what was happening with the winter wilding and how things were just getting worse and worse, people felt they needed to start manipulating behavior. So that said, many Christians today may not know all of the details of Christmas, but almost all are aware of the fact that there was a pagan holiday at this time, and it was infused with celebrating the birth of Christ. Now, I want you to think of something, and actually, I want you to do the due diligence and research. Go look up Christmas carols. Go to Wikipedia and look at the history and the date of Christmas carols. You will find that the majority of all the Christmas carols you are aware of that are even normal Western society Christmas carols really didn't start getting written until the mid-1800s or the middle of the 19th century. Isn't that amazing? Now, not to say that there weren't songs of religious value recognizing and or celebrating the birth of Christ. Some of those, you know, go back, but there's a leap. There's a huge leap from when those songs, because they weren't carols, those are not considered carols. Those were songs of religious expression, and they weren't tied to December Christmas type of thing. They were songs, and some of them are in Ireland. I think, go look at them. I'm trying to recall off the top of my head. I think they were somewhere in the, you know, 1700s, 1600s, something like that. And the same thing with Italy, where, you know, these Catholic and or different Christian, you know, breakoffs from the Catholic Church were deep in the culture and society. But you will not find in England or in, you know, Germany and some of these other places, you know, it was just where, and these were Catholic songs or these were religious songs by the state church of the time, if that makes sense. But they are not what you would consider. I mean, Johann Sebastian Bach wrote lots of songs regarding Christ and religious themes. I mean, he was a very religious man. What do you have, 28 kids or something? I guess you got to be religious to have that many kids. But back in those days, kids were a different thing than what we look at kids today. And I've even told you, even during John Adams, when him and Abigail Adams had a child, they actually didn't name the child. What they called the children back in those days, those Americans, this was a common practice, that they identified them or called them the visitor, because they didn't want to name this child until, and that's why some of the infant gravestones and family plots and so forth didn't really have a name. They just had kind of a date or what have you, because they were so superstitious. They felt that they named the child, it would die. And so, and that was because of infant mortality. I mean, those types of things were a reality back then. So anyway, I'm just trying to create this paradigm to actually start putting some facts. And actually, when you look at Christianity and how Christianity and the worship of Christianity since the beginning of the Catholic Church, because when Christ celebrated, or actually when Christ created his church, when he started organizing apostles and all these other things that he was ordaining, they didn't necessarily have, you know, hymns, and didn't have, you know, have somebody go out and create hymns. It wasn't a part of religion. However, when the Catholic Church started taking over, they started infusing singing and song as a part of, and that's how it is with even Judaism and most religions. They have songs and chants or reciting prayers, those types of things that people do, or, you know, through oration, verbally, out loud, so that, you know, those spoken words, you know, get indoctrinated, instilled, or what have you, help you obtain a frame of mind or what have you. So anyway, when you start looking at Christmas carols, then you have to start understanding that that's when they started infusing it. And it's obviously after the fact of when, you know, Irving started actually creating these stories. My point is that there is more support to say that this was a concoction than it was a evolution. Because had this been a real evolution, then Christmas carols would have spawned from the Irish and those other songs that were recognizing Christ's birth but had nothing to do with December and Christmas time. And that's my point. And so when you start doing the history, you go, oh my, the crumb trails are there. I don't want to bleed into this. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, so the fact is as you start looking from Cromwell and what, you know, how they were fining people for the spirit of the winter wilding in Massachusetts during those months, as you start really looking and you start tying all of these things together, when you look at the macro of all the information that's there, well, I'm going to tell you, most Christians today do not know the details of Christmas. All they know is how we have been indoctrinated into this tradition that really spawned from a pagan holiday. And a, you know, when we talk about a pagan holiday, we're not talking about, you know, a necessarily good thing. What I do want to say, and this is why I say this, Thanksgiving is this nation's true spiritual holiday, nation holiday. Christmas has become a Christian holiday, but it is still infused with all these concocted paganistic things. And this is what we want to kind of wrap up and get into. But before we do, let's look at Thanksgiving real quick. And how is it that that is a true spiritual holiday? because it is not recognizing that we feast and gorge ourselves with gluttony. It does, you know, with this little innuendo of reverence towards the pilgrims. Go read, if you've never done it, then maybe this coming Thanksgiving, you'll actually take the time. And if you've never heard me read for Thanksgiving, because I do it every year, I read George Washington's proclamation for the very first Thanksgiving under this new constitutional government. It had nothing to do with the pilgrims, but what it had to do was it was a call to serve him who gave us the Constitution, who gave us this nation. And that's how we sanctified this nation, as I've said in the as a part of the Christmas. In Christianity, when we do something to recognize it is done, and we sanctify it somehow. We sanctify it through usually sacrifice. A true holiday in recognizing something of spiritual nature is not something that is just a celebration. I mean, when the Jews gather for Passover, they sanctify that with the sacrificing of a lamb. They, even to this day, they still do that. There is a process of sanctifying that particular point and thing. So how do we sanctify it? By giving our money to retailers, to grocery stores and so forth, to engage in the Christmas traditions? Or should we really be sanctifying that, you know, okay, we're going to recognize, because as Christians, we can choose when and how we celebrate the birth of our Savior, but we must remember that we have adopted a spirit to this holiday that sets it apart. And when I say that spirit, it is the spirit of giving, but not of giving. You know, I guess a lot of people just say, well, you know, when it comes to giving, it all comes down to money, and, you know, giving money to people, that there you go, all right? I mean, do you believe that you would feel like, under your tradition paradigm of Christmas, that your parents, if they would have just gave you money, or your loved one, your spouse, if they just gave you money instead of something really thoughtful and something, you know, truly, you know, a sacrifice, then you start realizing what that the spirit of Christmas is. It should be a sacrifice of one's time, of one's energies, consecrating, you know, some form of a gift that they're giving you. There are all sorts of good movies out there that mock the giving and so forth. My point is that we have an opportunity to not bow to the retailers and so forth, but we have to start breaking the paradigm of how we have been led into their arms of boosting their sales and putting them into a black. Why is it that these corporations don't go into the black all year until Christmas time? If you understand how public traded companies have to cook their books and everything else, and they basically wait on this glut of spending that has been created as we, the lemmings, have been trained in doing over the past two centuries. Literally, it's about two centuries now, my friends. So let's break that. Let's start teaching people, you know, let's make these publicly traded companies become real honest and actually provide products for, you know, what we would call, you know, a worthy product throughout the year to buy, instead of, oh, well, we have to buy these things for other people. No, we don't. What we should be doing is we should be giving of ourselves. We should actually be helping in serving, because if you understand serving, serving actually comes down to, you know, helping other people find Christ. You know, whether you want to be a missionary or, you know, apostolating, whatever it is you want to call it. But those types of things are things that we should do probably as Christians. We know that Christ was not really born at this time of year. However, bringing people together in his name is always a good thing. Let us not surrender this time of year we call Christmas to paganism. And we do it every time when we open up our wallets and spend, you know, ridiculous amounts of money in making sure that we give gifts so that people feel recognized that you love them. Boy, I mean, that sets a terrible precedence, because that person should know you love them throughout the year, especially if they really mean something to you. I mean, it's one thing for your associates in giving them cards or something, but that shouldn't be a once a year thing. You know, companies started, you know, giving at the end of the year as a part of the Christmas spirit. Before Christmas, they would give out bonuses. Go watch National Lampoon Christmas Vacation. You know, and how Clark Griswold, you know, was expecting this huge bonus and he didn't get it because the company had shifted and he felt he was robbed, because it was his ability to feel wanted by the company was dependent upon that bonus check at the end of the year. Plus he had, you know, the pool dependency and all these other things. Let us instead focus on what the true spirit of the holiday should be. Instead, let's make his spirit the new norm to this day and every season. I would like to actually see more and more corporations having to become honest and providing an honest product for an honest dollar throughout the year, so that they, instead of gouging you, you know, throughout the year and then marking those things down so you finally buy them at Christmas that you've been waiting to get throughout the year, let's take that away. Let's no longer empower them for this quote-unquote concept that at a certain point in time during the year, we're going to open up our wallets and just pour it out to the corporate world. If you start understanding what and how we behave, we can change. We can literally change that paradigm and how we behave. If we move away from the commercialization of Christmas as Christians and towards giving of one's talents, time, and sustenance, not just at this time of year, but throughout the year, to those who are truly in need now and all year, I believe we will see this area nation again become blessed. That's why one of the things I mentioned to the crystals out there, and that's why I try to point this out in Malachi. If you understand how the Lord blesses us by sanctifying, so if we give of ourselves, and there's no better way than fasting and not eating and trying to, you know, go and do, you know, the Lord's work or what have you, and while you're doing that and you're fasting, and then giving that money that you could have actually, you would have spent on feeding yourself in actually consecrating that by giving it to others. I really don't like, I'm not trying to preach, but I'm trying to actually put everything on the table when it comes to Christmas, what we can do and what we could be doing, and how we can truly change blessings of this nation and how we can actually be blessed as people. Service in his name is divine, and I can't put it any more simpler than that. And that's why George Washington called upon the nation to serve in his name for one day in giving thanks for the Constitution of this nation he gave us. I honestly believe that we can, and we should, move away from this whole commercialization. I know that there's these traditions, but we need to start teaching people that these things, the Christmas tree and all of, and the origins of these things, have more pagan roots than they have anything to do with Christ. And so when we come back, we're going to get into that bombing. We're going to get into a few other things that we wanted to get into. But I hope that you had a great spirit for the Christmas celebration of however you celebrate it. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so now that we've wrapped up what I should have tried to do in one show, but it's a lot of content, it's a lot of information to try to create this macro view of Christmas, so you kind of see how it's difficult. I will really work between now and then for next Christmas to do it in one concise show. I just have to really get out of the obligatories and get straight into it in the very first episode or our first segment. Anyway, we will be getting back to the content. And as a matter of fact, I think you will see when we start talking about the Tennessee bombing, which will, as soon as I kind of cover what we're still going to cover in the next few episodes or next of our few shows we've got, we will kind of show how fortuitous or how, not necessarily trying to be insightful, but trying to show you the benefit of understanding the Kentucky and Virginia resolutions regarding the Tennessee bombing. And I'll put that all together for you. But we'll get into the more content probably after the New Year's and after the, you know, the petitions and so forth. Bottom line, we will be going into the New Year's resolutions. We'll probably start that tomorrow because that usually, I think last year it took like four or five segments. And I'll try to be more concise. We'll be a little better this year, but we'll get straight into it because what I want to do is I don't want to wait till New Year's Day and that first week. I think if you really want to have New Year's resolutions, then you probably want to, you know, listen to these shows prior to the New Year so that you can prepare yourself. What I ask is that you try to pull out, if you even have any, if you've never done it, then you definitely want to listen to the show if you'd like to actually make changes in your life. If you want to take control of what and how you behave, then you have to start setting goals and you have to, you know, get into what you need to do to doing that. So, and we'll get into that as we cover that probably in our next show. But what we'll also have to do is kind of lay some of the information regarding the petitions and so forth. We are looking to probably have Benjamin Carr, the owner of AdLocal, on to talk about the ISP services and, you know, what the reason why I'm doing these promos at no cost is, and he helps us because of our previous relationship, but He is a patriotic business owner. And if you understand deplatforming and what the heck's going on, if you have a conservative business, then you should care about becoming deplatformed. There's sites, as we've talked about, the Conservative Treehouse and other sites that are being deplatformed because these communist ISP companies, whether they be GoDaddy or what have you, they are playing to the politically correct and getting rid of constitutionalist and conservative websites because they're going to view, just like the Obama administration considered veterans and patriots as enemies of America, the enemies of America, as they're creating it, but they are truly the enemies of the Constitution. And that's where we really need to start looking at what the truth is and understanding what a patriot really is. Anyway, so we'll have him on, and I'm going to be doing a new promo soon, and I'll give you some more information on that for another company that provides security for events and so forth. And they're kind of nationwide, and they will travel, and they do this at no cost to these events and functions. And so they need funding and help to provide security. We're going to get to a point coming up where we, just like the Las Vegas concert, where a liberal wacko shot a bunch of people that were attending. Why shoot at people at a country festival, a country music performance? Because typically those who like country music still love the Constitution. They're considered patriotic people and so forth. I mean, they're not ones out in Seattle, Portland, and around the nation burning down cities and protesting and so forth. These people still believe in the rule of law and so forth. That's why they were targeted. There's reasons why certain demographics are being targeted by these bioweapons coming out of China. They kill the old people because we understand. There's reasons why things are happening the way they are. I also want to get into the Liberty Summits and the importance of them, especially as we head into these new state legislation sessions that are going to start happening starting actually next week. So we want to talk about that. But at this point in time, let's kind of look at the story and how quickly it unraveled and how things are being presented regarding the Tennessee bombing. Because as I see it, when we really look at, what the heck happened, then you're not really getting the full story. So as it's been reported, this bomber supposedly is dead. When did he die and or who killed him? Did he really blow up in the bomb? Here's some challenges that you need to start thinking about. These questions are literally challenging what they are telling us. How can you match the DNA of a no traced ashes out there to somebody else? And how can you do it that quickly? As a matter of fact, how many people actually have their DNA mapped and or registered with the government? Have you been mapped? Now, here's the question. Have you ever been swabbed for a culture? 9 times out of 10, your insurance company won't pay for that. But it's coming to a point where the insurance company will actually start doing it because it'll be a government regulation that when when a procedure is required, they will add to the cost of that procedure to take that sample and do a DNA mapping because they're going to want to have every American's DNA just like they have in China and all these other communist states. They want to know who's who so that they can find out traces of you. So they go, the person that they're looking for or of interest, they have, just like fingerprints, they will have your DNA. The people that I know have already been mapped are patriots that have been in the service since the late 90s. I can tell you, when I was getting out, I retired in 98. I walked out of the Marine Corps in 98. And that last year, it was a 97-98 time frame when they started introducing DNA swab test so that they can map your DNA. So just in case you got blown up, they can ID you. Now, as I was leaving, I was already in the process and so forth in 97, 98 timeframe, that they, it didn't become a, oh, everybody's got to go get swabbed until like, I'd say 6 to 4 months when I was getting out. And because I'd already basically put my package in 6 months prior to this, I said, hey, let's save the government some money because I'm retiring. The package is already in. I've been approved. You know, I'm gone. And most everybody said, yeah, okay, because it wasn't at that point a draconian process. They just, everybody needed to get mapped that's in the military. Well, I'm retiring. So I didn't get mapped. But everybody else since then has been mapped. My children that have served in the military, that, you know, obviously they enlisted after I retired, but I'm just saying they have been mapped. And if you've served and you served after that point and you've been swabbed, then you've been mapped. And now, as you understand, I've already said the Obama administration already looked at vets as the problem. So how can you start mapping this DNA unless you have a good population to come from? And how did this guy actually have his DNA mapped already? So here's the real story that you're not being told. AT&T got a contract to do forensic audit on the Dominion voting machines, and those machines were being moved to Nashville this past week. The former owner of the AT&T building in Nashville, William Kennard, is a board member for the Cerberus, C-E-R-B-E-R-U-S, Capital Management and AT&T. He was also Bill Clinton's FCC chair and Obama's ambassador to the EU. This guy must be really great, huh? Dominion Voting is owned by Cerberus Capital Management by William Kennard. Cerberus is running by, and actually it's ran there by the Staple Street executives. Joe Biden's brother-in-law, Stephen Owens, is the co-founder of Staple Street Executives, along with Mr. Kennard. The supercomputer in Tennessee was connected to the AT&T internet in Nashville. On the evening in question, the Cumberland River cooling system was compromised due to internet outage and the supercomputer fried. If you don't know what Kraken is, and if you've never seen the information regarding the Kraken going after the spies and so forth, it is a reference to a supercomputer former prosecutor, Sidney Powell, and she's been talking about this. So the explosion just happened to be at the AT&T location where they just so happened to control the cooling system for the supercomputer and house the Dominion voting machines and drives for the forensic audit. Just happened. It's when you start looking at the different events, and I can get into the Oklahoma bombing and how the Oklahoma bombing, and what we'll do, because I know you're really interested in this, but we'll get into this and start actually marrying up this. What I'm going to do is ask you tonight to go read Jefferson's Resolutions of 1798. He lists the crimes that the federal government has been delegated. With that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.